If a destructive nuclear, biological, or other type of incident happened in the United States, the rule of thumb is federal first responders don't want to be trading business cards with their state and local counterparts in the heat of response. The latest interagency intergovernmental exercise called Vibrant Response 17 aims to do more than just introduce first responders. Michael Collins is the Joint Task Force Civil Support Deputy to the Commander, and Stan Bacon is the Joint Task Force Civil Support Deputy for Plans, Policy, and Interagency Coordination. They tell Executive Editor Jason Miller about why this annual event is so important to preparing for a whole-of-nation response to an epic attack or incident.
It's an annual certification exercise to make sure that our organization is qualified to serve as a joint task force and to conduct urban search and rescue, life-saving, and other such operations just in case the need should ever come here in the United States. The reason our organization exists is, God forbid it should ever happen, but if there were a chemical, biological, radiological, or nuclear event in the United States, and the reason I say event and not attack, because it could be something like a nuclear power plant meltdown that they experienced in Fukushima, Japan, or it could be a weapon of mass destruction. But if we ever had a chemical, biological, nuclear, or radiological event in the U.S., Joint Task Force Civil Support and our subordinate forces would be there to assist the lead federal agency, usually FEMA, in responding to the incident.
And the goal of this is, again, it's an exercise, so it's not just the DOD going through this exercise, but it's a really a broad interagency group. And I would only imagine it probably includes some state and local as well. I think, Stan, that's where you come in. Talk a little bit about who this included and why.
We're starting to see the interagencies, both at the state and federal level, getting linked up with our DOD exercises. There are other exercises that were part of VR, Art and Century, Gotham Shield, Gotham Response. Some of those were other interagencies titles for their portion of the exercise that happened at the same time. For example, Joint Task Force Civil Support sent one team to New York, Albany, the other one to Trenton, New Jersey, to coordinate some of the federal response to help the states mitigate some of the gaps they may have in resources and capabilities to try to integrate, and particularly for us, the DOD portion of that response in with them to help them out with their shortfalls.
And this is also includes, as I think Mike said, FEMA would be the lead agency and DOD would support them. What other agencies would also play a role in this exercise?
There are actually quite a few. DOE, you have Department of Transportation, U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. For some of your listeners, they may be familiar with the Emergency Service Functions, ESFs, which is kind of how FEMA and the federal partners kind of organize their capabilities and capacities into these groupings of things. And each one of them are led by different agencies. And we're seeing more and more over the years, starting about 3 years ago, more and more of our interagency partners coming to these exercises and these tabletops in some cases, but in this case, it was actual exercise. And that brings with it also the states. For example, New Jersey stood up their state EOC, as did New York, and New York City, in their case, had their state EOCs or their city EOCs participate in the exercise as well for periods of time. So it's a great opportunity for the whole of community, the whole of government to kind of sit around and help solve a common problem that the states are trying to overcome. In this case, for VR, Art and Century, Gotham Response, and Gotham Shield, the scenario was an IND, an improvised nuclear device, in the Lincoln Tunnel. So it impacted both New Jersey and New York. And they get a chance for the different agencies to talk to each other, find out creative ways to help them overcome the effects of that on the population.
And actually, that was my next question. Talk about this vibrant response. So there was an improvised nuclear device in the Lincoln Tunnel. That was the exercise. Let's be clear here. This did not happen. This was just a test. And how did the exercise work? Maybe Mike, jump in for that.
This year was a phenomenal combination of multiple exercises like Stan was talking about. In particular, this year, while we were conducting Vibrant Response at Camp Atterbury, Indiana, simultaneously, the Army was running Guardian Response down at the Muscatatuck Urban Training Center, also in Indiana. And it was a phenomenal opportunity to look at the type of response operations they would do. So they hired hundreds of role players, and so people needed to be extricated from debris, or some people were sheltering in tunnels underneath the urban training center. Other people were suffering from the shock of the blast or losing their loved ones. And then they use various types of moulage and makeup to give people injuries that need to be treated. So it was terrific that our soldiers, airmen, and Marines who train for this mission were able to go down there and practice all these skill sets, including triage, medical stabilization, decontamination of personnel, both ambulatory and non-ambulatory personnel, and then medically evacuating them either by air ambulance or Army field ambulances.
And this happened over a week, 2 weeks, a couple days. Talk a little about the time frame. When did it start? When did it end?
Well, the exercise started for us on the 24th of April. As Stan said, there was a simulated improvised nuclear device that was detonated on the west side of the Lincoln Tunnel. And the exercise is still continuing on right now because there are actually three Title 10 or three full-time military task forces that do this. We, Joint Task Force Civil Support, we practiced the first week last week, and currently C2 CRE Alpha and C2 CRE Bravo are doing their vibrant response exercises up in Camp Atterbury and Muscatatuck just as we did last week. So the whole thing runs for about 2 to 3 weeks when you include the movement of equipment, personnel, training of multiple task forces, and then the stand down of the equipment.
As you said earlier on, the goal is to practice. So if something, you know, should happen, whether an attack or a man-made disaster of sorts or an accident of sorts, that the services, the government organizations know where to go, what to do, and how it works. How do you measure that success? How do you prepare for these types of exercises?
Frankly, it's extremely hard, you know, because when something really bad happens, I mean, it really starts out as kind of a state's rights issue, because when something really happens, it's up to that mayor and his or her support staff and their first responders to respond. And of course, a 10 kiloton nuclear device would easily exceed the capabilities of any city in the United States. So then the governor and local government agencies affiliated with the state will respond. And the state will call out its National Guard. And then they will exercise EMAC agreement with surrounding states and their National Guards to help out. Meanwhile, there'd be a presidential disaster declaration, and that allows Homeland Security, FEMA, and the like to start responding. But even then, when you're thinking about tens of thousands of people dead, hundreds of thousands of people who were injured or required decontamination, it's going to become a whole-of-nation response. And that's where we become involved. If it exceeds the city, the state, and the federal agency's ability to respond, then DOD could also respond. And what makes this exercise so important is that it doesn't just happen. It takes incredible coordination for the city, the state, the federal government, and the Department of Defense to respond to whatever it is the incident commander, whoever it is that's in charge of the overall response, to provide them what they need in the quantities they need it, where and when they need it, to properly respond to the incident. So practicing it, this is a golden opportunity. And as Stan said, or alluded to, in past years, we've used role players, people who have previously held the jobs as a state emergency operations center manager, or somebody who was a member of the FEMA incident management assistant team. But to be able to do it like we did this year, where we worked with real members from the New Jersey and the New York Emergency Operations Center and real FEMA IMAT teams. And we worked with the dual status commanders of New Jersey and New York. So to bring those real people into the exercise is phenomenal training for us to see just how difficult it's going to be to coordinate all these capabilities to help the people affected.
And Jay, this is Stan. Just kind of add on to that. You talked about the prepared portion of it. I would like to, for your listeners, this is, even though the exercise for most people only lasted 7 days, a handful of weeks total, this has been in the making for over 365 days. And my shop, for example, is responsible for working with some of the plans development. So working with the states over a year ago, the planning for this began of how, as a nation, as a state, and as locals, we would respond to a catastrophic event in this locality, in what they refer to as the New York region. So it starts a long time before that. And then the exercise, if you will, is almost a culmination of, okay, this is what we talked about. This is the information we shared. this is the direction we want to go. And there was a chance to kind of say, yep, we have it right, or we need to go back and tweak stuff. So for another 3 months or so, a lot of people behind the scenes will continue to refine the lessons learned from this exercise, the good and the bad, and then tweaking the plan so that when the day comes, or if the day ever comes for real, we're not starting from scratch. We kind of already got an idea. We have a shared vision, again, from the federal side as well as the state and local side, a shared understanding of how we think we want to move forward. And that way we can quickly, much more rapidly, get ourselves integrated with the state and not have that, you know, as you've heard before in this community, you know, exchanging business cards on the day of the event.
Stan Bacon is the Joint Task Force Civil Support Deputy for Plans, Policy, and Interagency Coordination. Michael Collins is the Joint Task Force Civil Support Deputy to the Commander. You can learn more about Vibrant Response 17 and hear this entire interview at federalnewsradio.com.